James Scott is the author. Curtis LeMay is not satisfied and believes he will also be fired, as Hansel was, by Hap Arnold, because the strategic bombing is not improving. The B-29s are not in any way surprising the Japanese. The Japanese are demonstrating that though they're blockaded, though they're losing, they're going to fight to the last. They will not surrender. What is to be done? LeMay, I picture him lying in his Quonset hut, looking at the ceiling. Do we know exactly what it was, or is it him pondering Dresden and the news from Dresden? Did that do it, James?
No, actually, LeMay, it probably begins even earlier than that, because LeMay had looked at the results of the July 1943 firebombing of Hamburg, which was actually more destructive than Dresden. Everybody knows of Dresden today.
In February 45 was Dresden, so it's about this period.
Yeah, so Dresden is February 45, but Hamburg burns in the summer of 43. And LeMay was in Europe then, and he studied the after-action results of that. So he knew what fire could do to a city. And you're right, LeMay spent much of his time thinking at night. In fact, if you read his personal letters home, he's always writing about his lack of sleep, because he's literally up all night thinking, trying to figure out how to do this. And so that's when he kind of comes to the realization that what Hansel was doing, high-altitude daylight precision bombing, it's simply not going to work. And if he's going to successfully attack Japanese cities, he's going to have a radical rethinking of American strategy. And he ultimately settles on a plan that is, you know, it's so perilous, it's so morally fraught, that he decides he's not going to tell anybody about it. He's going to put this operation together himself, and he's not going to even run it up the ladder to his superiors, which is a pretty incredibly brave undertaking for a 38-year-old field commander.
He calls in one of his subordinates and says, I need you to come up, because training is everything for LeMay.
Yeah.
I need you to come up with a training plan for a bombing run on a local island, I imagine. I'm not sure what they were bombing. And the question was, at what altitude? And he says 50 feet. What's his thinking, James?
Well, of course, he knows that the pilots are going to freak out at 50 feet. Because what LeMay really wants to do is he wants to go from 30,000 feet down to 5,000 feet. This is barely a mile above the Japanese cities. But he knows that he's going to get tremendous pushback probably from the air crews at that. So he actually says, all right, for training purposes, I'm going to bring you all the way down to 50 feet. And of course, he gets a huge blow up from the men on that. And he forces them to fly that mission. And his thinking is, all right, if I can get them to fly a test mission at 50 feet, they'll be thankful when we fly at 5,000 feet. So it's really it's kind of a mental game he plays with some of his airmen. But he's right. It works.
The preparation here is that Tokyo believes that it is standing up very well to the American bomber. And there are fire companies. There are fire breaks. There are committees organized to defend various neighborhoods, all in place. Although, James, I was struck by one detail you provide us. I think the best fire equipment in Tokyo is an American-built La France fire engine. Is that correct?
From 1917. Yeah, it's a really old one. Yeah, I mean, by American standards at that time point, Japan's fire departments are a wreck. I mean, they're woefully understaffed because Japan has such a manpower crunch that they've sort of, you know, recruited everybody that they can to go fight. And of course, because the war is going on, they can't get an importation of newer equipment from America, which had been selling them everything from oil to fire engines. And so they're really relying on traditional firefighting techniques, which is neighborhood associations. And these neighborhood associations are armed with buckets of water from cisterns and bags of sand and brooms. The idea being that neighbors can sort of come together to sort of fight a fire long enough, you know, to sort of hold it back until the professionals arrive. Of course, they are confident in this because all the early raids have been these strategic pinpoint raids with demolition weapons. So you didn't have the huge fires that you would ultimately get with incendiaries. And it lulls the Japanese into a sense of comfort and confidence.
A note about the emperor, Hirohito. I look at him differently, thanks to your very careful reporting, James. Mm-hmm. Hirohito lives in the Imperial Palace. When we first talked, I'd never been to Tokyo. I've been there now, and I was at the Imperial Hotel, which you can see the emperor's compound across the beautiful park. Around it is the very vibrant Japanese business district all around the park. It was not dissimilar though in those days, but you make the point that Tokyo is like a Hollywood set in front of a hard living. Most of the city is made out of wood and paper and poverty. Is that correct, James?
Absolutely. And if people today, you think of Tokyo and it's steel and glass high rises. But back then it was almost all one and two story wood framed buildings, literally built side by side with alleyways that were about 12 feet wide, sort of cut through them. And they did have a handful of concrete structures, schools, train stations, things like that in a very small financial district. That kind of, you know, with a few high rises, but it was like a Hollywood backdrop of westernization. The majority of the city was that traditional architecture of Japan. And that's what that mock village we built in Utah was designed to replicate. And so it was a very realistic interpretation of the majority of architecture and housing and structures in Tokyo.
And LeMay has all this information. He knows the population density. He knows where the neighborhoods are. He knows where the palace is. They've laid that all out for him, and that's part of his thinking. Does he call it a radical idea? Is that his language?
You know, I can't remember if he calls it that, but when he finally does alert Washington, he says something to the effect of it's going to be a dramatic, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but it's going to be a dramatic change in tactics. So he recognizes, he changes everything about it.
Right.
You know, he says, we're going to go from high altitude, daylight precision bombing. We're going to go from 30,000 feet to 5,000 feet.
Let's go to the briefing, James. We're going to go to the briefing of the B-29 crews that are going to fly. Black Snow, Curtis LeMay, the firebombing of Tokyo and the road to the atomic bomb. James Scott is the author. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.